Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what up, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk Radio. But tonight is that Friday Night Fire with my special guest co-host Tracy, a.k.a. T-Dub, as we talk about NFL Championship Weekend. Man, it's going to be a – hopefully the games will be good this week. But, Tracy, what's going on, bro? How you doing?
Not too much. How about you, man?
Oh, man, I can't complain, man, just hanging in there. Before we jump into football, what do you think about who was the all-star starters? You agree, disagree for the NBA?
I didn't really get a chance to check out the whole list. I saw that Wiggins was in there. I know Jokic is in there. But I really didn't get to see the rest. I know you're usually up on those things. Who surprised you?
Oh, man, the starters for the West are Steph, Wiggins, Joker, Bron, and Ja.
Okay.
In the East, Durant, Giannis, Embiid, Trae Young, and DeMar DeRozan.
Okay, yeah. The only thing that stands out to me on both of those teams is Wiggins. I'm not saying he shouldn't be an all-star, but should he really be a starter? I mean, I'm just saying. I think there's probably – you know, somebody out there that should be in his spot. But everybody else, they sound pretty legit. That sounds like dudes that should be there.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was very surprised Wiggins made it. But at the same time, you got to look at what Golden State has been doing as a team. And I think a lot of people, when they vote on it, they normally sway towards winning teams. So I think that's why Wiggins get in. Although I think Draymond is probably more important than Wiggins, but, you know, it's good to see Wiggins got the nod. So, but look, man, we came here to talk football, bro.
But you got to let go.
Let's talk about last weekend's games, man. We had all games came down to either the last play or a few plays. Nah, Cincinnati won at the buzzer. San Francisco won at the buzzer. The Rams won at the buzzer. And Kansas City won at overtime. So, basically, they all came down to the last play. So
They all came down to the last play. Yep.
Yeah, man. Hey, I tell you what. If you didn't watch a game last weekend, you missed some good football. So, let's jump into it, man. Let's talk about Cincinnati, Tennessee. Break it down for me.
All right, for me, you already know I thought Cincinnati was going to lose. I thought that they would come back to earth as an underdog team and realize we're in the playoffs. We're not supposed to win this game, but it didn't happen. They surprised me. Like I said, underdog teams eventually do something wrong. They'll turn the ball over at the wrong time, or they're just getting dominated on both sides of the ball, and then they just realize they're not supposed to be there. But that never happened for Cincinnati, even though they could not block Tennessee on defense. They were in the backfield pretty much all day, and they still lost. So Cincinnati made the plays when they needed to. That interception at the end of the game was big. They made all the defensive plays when they had to. Tennessee kind of helped them out because they went too much to Derrick Henry. You kind of warned against that last week when you said that maybe they need to ease him in. But they went full throttle, like dude didn't just miss 2 months. And they gave him the ball 20 times, and he could never really get it going. Matter of fact, Foreman had only 4 carries, but he still had more yards than Derrick Henry did. And so I feel like they kind of messed up their team by bringing Derrick Henry back, because I felt like they had gotten a formula to where they knew how to win without him. And so throwing him back in there just kind of messed stuff up. Tannehill was awful. You kind of talked about that a little bit, too, where you felt like he might be the difference in the game, and he surely was in a negative way. And so I don't want to take credit away from Cincinnati, but I think Tannehill made too many mistakes for a veteran, and he did just enough for his team to lose, even though they deserved to win. They only gave up, what, 16 points? Usually you should win those games, but not this time.
Bro, I can't even lie, man. When I was watching that game, I'm sitting here like there is no way that Cincinnati should even be winning. Your quarterback gets sacked 9 times. Normally that means you're basically punting the ball. That's 9 punts, basically, that should have happened in the game. But, you know, everybody want to blame Tannehill. But it was too many bad decisions by Tennessee as a whole. Why are you going for 2 points after your first touchdown? Kick the field goal. How much they lose by? 1 point? I think
they
lost
by
1 point.
Maybe so. It could be.
I can't remember how much they lost by, but
yeah,
I
can't remember the score either.
Yeah. So, but, you know, kick the field goal. Go up, you know. Me and you, we knew that Derrick Henry was come back. Cincinnati knew Derrick Henry was come back. Every time Derrick Henry was in the game, what they do? Line, they put 8 in the box. Tannehill beat us. I thought Tannehill and A.J. Brown played good together. I thought they had great games. But the decision-making in the end, if you're going to play for overtime, why are you throwing the ball? Just hand the ball off. Especially it looked as if they were playing for overtime. So if you're going to do that, just hand the ball off. I know a lot of people are going to blame Tannehill once again, but wide receiver or tight end, catch the ball. That's your job. It ain't like that pass, that last pass, the one that got intercepted. It ain't like it was a difficult catch. All the guy got to do is catch the ball, Tracy, and the game is they going into overtime. But, Tracy, I know last week we talked about this. I told you, Cincinnati offensive line, bro, they play bad. They play bad as a unit. I couldn't believe Joe Burrow. I was like, man, this kid got heart, man. 9 sacks, and he still didn't, like, you know, do the Tom Brady where he just ducked down when the pressure get close to him. He stood in there, bro, and still stood tall in the pocket. I earned a lot of respect for Joe Burrow last week.
For me with him, I was impressed that he only turned the ball over 1 time, and even that one wasn't his fault. That was the one that got tapped up in the air by the running back in the flat, and then it was a great interception by Tennessee. So you normally think when a guy, like you said, gets hit like that, he either does that feigning goat thing, like you said, that Brady was doing, that Peyton Manning used to do, or they just hurry up and get rid of the ball and throw it in situations where they shouldn't. But he didn't do that at all. So you're right. He does – it has been print on him, don't turn the ball over, because he really doesn't turn the ball over that often. I think last year he struggled because he was a rookie. But this year he's really learned. I would rather take a sack than turn the ball over. You don't want to see your quarterback get beat up like that, though. And that can't continue. I mean, they were able to win this game. And the actual score, I looked it up after we couldn't remember. It was 19-16. So they lost by 3.
Okay.
But, like, I agree with you, though, with this going for 2 at the beginning of the game. Sometimes these coaches try to be too smart for their own good, and they try to come up with these things in the playoffs that they haven't been doing all season. When it works, you look brilliant. When it doesn't work, what was he thinking? Why did he do like you said? And so just do what you've been doing. And they should have won that game going away, especially with getting to the quarterback that often.
Yeah, man. Because actually I wouldn't have been mad if they would have did, like, a play that put – but you got the defense thinking, you know, you got Tannehill in the read option with Derrick Henry, you know, something like that. Or you got both backs in the backfield. But they just did a straight handoff. I'm like, yeah, that play ain't going nowhere. As soon as they did, I was like, yeah, he ain't going nowhere. I mean, even though he got stopped, a half inch, probably about a half yard from getting across the goal line. But that play call, just didn't work.
No, I think Tennessee was feeling themselves. I thought they felt like, oh, yeah, see, we knew this was going to happen. We can just do whatever we want to. So we're going to get them down real quick, and then we can just stomp on them, and then they'll just have to play from behind all day. But it just didn't happen that way. And like I said, they put too much faith in Derrick Henry. How are you going to get the ball 20 times, 20 carries and you haven't played in 2 months. Most guys that play every week don't get 20 carries. I bet you if you look back at the whole season, you probably can count on both hands out of the entire league how many times a guy carried the ball 20 times, not counting Derrick Henry doing it before he got hurt. That's just not the way NFL is played now. So, yeah, they lost themselves the game.
Except the Colts. The Colts probably handed it off about 20, 25 times a game.
but then remember, they had those problems where they wouldn't give him the ball. And they were like, why is he not giving the ball to Jonathan Taylor?
Exactly.
This dude, he can't be stopped. And so that's when they started losing, is where he wouldn't touch the ball for long stretches, which made absolutely no sense. And so, yeah, those are the only two teams that were doing it. Everybody else, 16 carries and maybe a couple of catches out of the backfield. That was usually the most that you would see where one guy would touch the ball out of the backfield. So a guy getting that many carries after being off since, October, and then all of a sudden he's supposed to come back and be the best version of himself in a game that matters more than any other game in the season. Yeah, they were flawed when they did that, and everything else just kind of fell behind that. The acquisition of Julio didn't pay off. They were never able to develop a tight end in place of Jonnu Smith. They had a few things. They lost their coordinator. Tannehill was never the same. I don't know if he's ever going to be the same. I think people underrate when people lose coordinators. So Arthur Smith leaving obviously affected him because he looks like the Tannehill from Miami more so than he's looked like the guy that Tennessee got when he came there.
Yeah, man, I totally agree with you on that one. But look, man, let's go to probably the biggest upset of the weekend. San Francisco taking on Green Bay. I'm going to start off with this one, Tracy. I think Aaron Rodgers bears all the blame for this loss. His refusal to spread the ball around. It's like, bro, San Francisco figured out that you only going to throw to Devontae. So they doubled him. So guess what Aaron started doing? Dumping it to Aaron Jones, who had, 10 catches for 129 yards? It's like you got other receivers on the team. Alan Lazard is serviceable. Equipment in St. Brown is serviceable. Randall Cobb was back. I just didn't like the way Green Bay played. Even if you look at the last play, he threw it to Devontae, but it was another wide receiver that came open right across the middle of the field. It's like, Aaron, what are you doing, bro? I think LaFleur should have took Aaron Rodgers to task on the sideline to implore him to use other guys in the offense. Tracy, you can't be that dependent on one wide receiver in the biggest game of the year. And one last thing, bro. Deebo Samuel was a beast in that game. When they put him back there to return the kick, I was like, wow, I would never put my number one wide receiver to return a kick. He returned to 45 yards. And lastly, 8 sacks on third down by San Francisco defense, unheard of, bro. Great job by San Francisco. Aaron Rodgers deserves all the blame for this loss. He just refused to spread the ball around, bro.
It's hard to argue with you. I mean, going back to Deebo Samuel, the comment you made about him real quick, you see coaches do that in big games. Matter of fact, you saw Kansas City do the same thing. Remember they put Tyreek Hill back there and he had a big return for him that he almost broke? And then remember back in the day with your team, with your Washington football team, when Daryl Green was on the squad. He didn't return punts during the regular season, but when it was the playoffs, Derrick Green was back there, and Daryl Green was going to take one to the house, or he was going to get you a big return or two to get you in good field position. So that's what smart coaches do. Like you said, though, with Deebo Samuel, you kind of question a little bit because he gets hurt so often, and if you lose him, you're done. That's pretty much the way their offense works this year. So they took a calculated risk, and it worked out. Now, having said that, San Francisco is a tough physical team, but they were very fortunate to win that game. They won an NFL playoff game with 106 net passing yards. They ran for the same amount of yards that they passed for. You just don't see that in today's NFL. Jimmy Garoppolo was awful. He made a couple of throws when he needed to, but basically that game was won based on Deebo Samuel running the ball and playing good defense and getting after Aaron Rodgers. And, of course, one of the worst special teams that I have ever seen. I've been watching football for decades, and I can't remember a special team that was worse than Green Bay. You saw that. That was awful. They should have fired their coach on the spot. He should have been fired immediately. He should have been fired during the regular season because apparently they had been having problems all year. And as we know, the playoffs expose whatever warts you have, and that one was highly exposed. And so not only did San Francisco win, that was the only touchdown they had, if I remember right, was that one where they blocked the punt and ran it in. Everything else was just field goals. And so
13-10.
Yeah, so you win the game based on your special teams and running the ball. That sounds like something out of a bygone era of football. And so Green Bay was overrated, and here's why I say that. You kind of touched on it a little bit with Aaron Rodgers, and I think he is part of the problem, not just this year, but in years past. I'm not saying he's not a great player. He is obviously one of the best quarterbacks has ever been. But he has lost four championship games between 2014 and 2020. He's been the one Super Bowl. He won that one. But that was, what, 11 years ago, 12 years ago now? He's lost four championship games since then. As recently as 2019, they were the number two seed. They lost one of those championship games I'm talking about. Last season, they were the number one seed. They lost the first game they played. This year, they were the number one seed. They lost the first game they played in again. So just like I told you the other day we did one of these, I'm not going to say Matt LaFleur is not a good coach, but I don't think he's as good as their record indicates. I think he was able to get into a situation where he kind of had the best of everything. He had everything he needed to get these wins in the regular season. But you see what they're really made of when they get to the playoffs. So there's something wrong with this team. I'm not sure why they can't get over the hump, but it happens again this year, and they may not get another shot as far as having Aaron Rodgers there is concerned.
Yeah, man. Remember, I had Matt LaFleur as the person I had under the most pressure last week because you can't keep winning all these regular season games and then coming up short in the playoffs.
No, you surely can't.
So, I forgot all about – I ain't going to say I forgot about the special teams, but remember at the beginning of the telecast, they was like Matt LaFleur was worried about his special teams. He was hoping that last Saturday wasn't a night it would rear his ugly head. I think he may have spoke that into existence, bro. He should have just left that in the
game.
Sometimes don't put it out in the universe, man. Just keep it inside, man.
That's right.
Jimmy G tried his best to keep to give it over to Green Bay, but
he did.
But hey, it wasn't meant to be for Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Just another disappointing year, bro. And normally when Green Bay lose, we normally can blame it on their defense. We can't even blame it on their defense this year.
No, there's nothing else they could have done. I mean, again, same thing I said with Tennessee. Your defense has done enough to where you should be winning that game. Matter of fact, you should be winning handily. And the very fact that you don't win, if I'm one of those defensive players, what do you even say to the offense after a game like that? Because you carried them and you still couldn't win. And you ran home. And the weather was bad for a warm weather team like San Francisco. You still don't win. They gave away an excellent opportunity, especially once Tampa Bay lost too. Of course, they didn't know that at the time. But they would be the odds-on favorite, I would think, if they had won this game to beat the Rams and go ahead and get into the Super Bowl. But, of course, now they don't even have that option.
Yeah, I think if Aaron Rodgers get traded or, whatever, I think if he's not with Green Bay, I think you'll hear a lot of stuff start to seep out about him being a jerk, him being this and that, whereas everybody is loving on him because he's their quarterback. I think you'll start to hear a lot of snickering and, people finally telling the truth about how they really feel about him once he's gone. So, but look, man, probably, I can't even say probably, because those Sunday games were both, man, they were both good games, bro. Rams, Bucks, talk to me.
Both teams had injuries on their offensive line, and we talked about that last week. We talked about Whitworth being out. We talked about Tristan Wirfs being out for the Buccaneers. And basically, to put it in simple terms, the Rams overcame their offensive line problems and Tampa Bay didn't. Rams took advantage of Tampa Bay's injuries. They had pressure on Brady all day long. I can't remember the last time I've seen him look as bad as he looked in that game. He struggled. He was not accurate, throwing the ball at people's feet, overthrowing people, and he just couldn't really get comfortable. Now, one thing that he did do, and I was so wishing for Tampa Bay to come back, because I'm so sick of hearing about how Atlanta lost to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. So I was hopeful they would come back from this huge gap, and then maybe people would start talking about this game since it was more recent. But it wasn't meant to be. They fell behind by 24. They came back with a furious rush, but then their defense just couldn't hold up. Stafford did what the Rams got him to do. He was able to get them a big win, and now they're just one step away from the Super Bowl. Chances are if they had Jared Goff, they lose that game. The Rams' running game looked awful, just awful. Cam Akers started the game. He got 24 carries. I don't think he even averaged 2 yards a carry. And then you haven't even gotten to his two fumbles yet. So somehow, in spite of that, the Rams were able to win based on that pass rush. And then they were able to cover up enough for having weaknesses in their defensive backfield by having these no-names come up and play very well, actually. And so the Rams did what they had to do to overcome their injuries. Just like you predicted, Tampa Bay had too many injuries. They just couldn't overcome it. They played valiantly, but it just wasn't enough. And like you said, eventually it caught up to them. Gronk couldn't get out on his pass routes because they needed him to stay in and block because they just couldn't hold up. And then the Rams prevailed primarily because of that.
Yeah, man. I know a lot of Tom Brady fans want to say, oh, the GOAT had them back in it. The GOAT did this. The GOAT did that. Tom Brady was playing a bad game up until Detroit to try to get the game away. So I don't want to hear Tom Brady did this, Tom Brady did that. Tom Brady only scored those points because Detroit did everything in their power to give it to him. First of all, if Cam Akers doesn't fumble that ball at the end of the first half, they go down big time. So I don't even want to hear that. Stafford, real quick,
you said Detroit. I know you meant the Rams. You probably was thinking about Stafford in Detroit.
Yeah, the Rams. Yeah, because my next point was about Stafford. Man, Stafford showed me a lot of heart, man. On that last drive, I think McVay, if Jared Goff was their quarterback, I just don't think Jared Goff makes those throws. I think Stafford, when they came out and did the quarterback draw, I was like, man, what's going on? That's a bad play. Then you got to use your last time out. Then they hit Cooper Kupp. Then they come back and hit Cooper Kupp again. I was like, wow. But, bro, we talked about it. Aaron Donald and Von Miller dominated Sunday. If it wasn't Aaron Donald getting pressure, it was Von Miller getting pressure. Tampa Bay offensive line just couldn't hold him, man. And it's like what I say, Tracy. Tom Brady was going to feel like Pat Mahomes felt last year in the Super Bowl from the first play. No, because the first play they ran got 12 yards, Leonard Fournette. Second play they ran got 14 yards, Leonard Fournette. Then they tried to run the ball. Then they tried to throw. Bam, Aaron Donald right up the middle. Try to throw it again, Von Miller coming off the edge. I was like, dang, bro, the running game working. You should at least run it until they stop you. And then that first drive, they throw the ball. What were they, like five and out? They ran the ball twice, got two first downs, and then threw the ball three times in a row and couldn't complete a pass. But Odell Beckham had another productive game, showing he can still beat man-to-man coverage. So teams, I mean, I know they want to double Cooper Kupp, but you got to realize Odell was all-pro, and he can still beat man-to-man coverage. The only person I was disappointed in Saturday for that game Sunday, Jalen Ramsey, what are you thinking, bro? You're supposed to be a top-flight corner. Mike Evans didn't even make a move on you. He ran a straight go. You get flat-footed, and you let him score. You're a DB. You know what time to score is. You don't know supposed to let him beat you deep. And I was like, come on, Jay Ram, you better than that.
Yeah, I was surprised that as good as their defense was, he was not good. And normally he's one of the ones you can count on. He obviously is the best, if not one of the best, defensive backs in the league. And so, like you say, to see him get beat so easily, and it's not like Mike Evans is a speed merchant. I mean, he's fast enough. But to just get beat that badly, and you was over there the whole time, it's not like you had to pick up somebody else's guy or something like that. You just flat out got beat. And like you said, at that point in the game, you don't care if he catches the ball in front of you as long as it's not a touchdown. But, yeah, he did not have a good game. He is an all-pros pro, though, so I'm sure he'll be back and ready to roll in this coming week. But I don't know how many passes he's going to see coming his way against the 49ers. We already know they're not going to throw that often, so we'll see.
And plus, the way they use Debo, I don't see him really traveling with Debo. I think when Debo lines up, I think the Rams just play their basic defense. And I think that's more out of disrespect for Jimmy G more than disrespect for Debo. So,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
Man, last game of the weekend, Buffalo, Kansas City. Man, I don't know how the NFL, how they had the foresight to make this the last game, but this was probably the, I ain't going to say probably, this was the best game of the weekend. Give me your thoughts.
I agree. That was the best game. The other games are great, but this game was an all-time great game. And, again, I've been watching football for many years at this point. This is one of the best games I've ever seen. I know a lot of people say that because this is the most recent one. But, no, aside of that, this is one of the best games ever. You have both teams making big plays on both sides. And then you just almost didn't want the game to end. You just wanted to see what was going to happen next. But one thing that we often don't do in these games is we don't call out coaches for mistakes that they made. And Buffalo made a mistake that didn't seem like a big deal at the time. But when they kicked off with 13 seconds left, instead of doing the squib kick that we've seen a million times when teams don't want to give you an opportunity to get a good run back, and plus they want some of the time to tick off, Buffalo didn't do that. They just kicked off into the end zone. So no time picked off. So that gave Kansas City that full 13 seconds. Again, at the time, 13 seconds doesn't seem like a big deal. Chances are they're probably not going to make a big difference until it does. So that particular call, non-call, is on Sean McDermott for not insisting that they kick off with the squib kick or what have you. And so that's on him. But Kansas City took care of business. It takes a great team to utilize that 13 seconds. And they did it. They was able to get what they needed, and then they got the ball right back in overtime. And that was game. Buffalo didn't even get a chance to do anything about it. And then here's something else to remember about this game. Tyrann Mathieu only played like maybe a few snaps, maybe a series or two, and then he got hurt, got the concussion or whatever. So they won that game against perhaps the best offense in the NFL without their best defensive back and maybe their best defensive player. So there's something to be said about that. Ultimately, with Kansas City on offense, their best players stepped up. Mahomes looks like Mahomes that we remember from last year. Like I said last week, this is the only game I pick right out of all four. So you know I got to talk about what I said last time. So
no, you were talking.
Mahomes looks. No, I got.
You picked the Rams. You picked the Rams. You were 2-2.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'll take that then. But on this one, Mahomes looks like Mahomes that we all remember before they met the Bucs in the Super Bowl last year. You know, he's confident. He's making all the throws. Tyreek Hill, where he caught that touchdown, where he just ran away from everybody. There's nothing you can do about that. All you can do is try to make the tackle at the beginning, because once he gets up, you're not going to catch that dude. And then that catch that Kelce made up the seam where it got him into position. I mean, what can you say? Big players make big plays, and that's exactly what they did. As far as Buffalo goes, I don't know if Buffalo's ever going to be this good again, because you know that their coach, their offense coordinator just got hired away as predicted. And so I don't know who's going to be their new offensive coordinator. It might be Ken Dorsey, who I think is like their QB coach right now or something. But usually when you lose your old coordinator, your system changes, and usually for the worse. So I don't know if we're going to see them be as elite as they are on the offensive end. Their defense will probably be better because they'll get Tre'Davious White back. But this might have been their best shot to get to the Super Bowl, and you can't take those opportunities lightly because they just don't come around that often. So I don't know. It was a great game. Kansas City prevailed. Buffalo's going to be kicking themselves a long time for giving this game away.
Yeah, if I'm Buffalo with Dayball going to the Giants, I think I'm calling Kubiak, man. I'm like, yo, Kubiak, you know, can you come and be our offensive coordinator for 1 year? Just coach up Ken Dorsey for 1 year. Get him comfortable with the way you run your offense. Because Kubiak like a lot of that bootleg stuff, and I think with Josh Allen, that bootleg stuff works really well because of his skill set, because he can throw it and he can run it. And then you don't have him in the pocket. So that scares the defense even more. So if I'm Buffalo, man, I'm on the phone like, yo, Kubiak, man, just give us 1 year. 1 year just to coach up Ken Dorsey. We want you to coach up Josh Allen, but we really need you to coach up Ken Dorsey. So that's what I would be if I'm Buffalo. But, you know, a lot of people saying that that game was probably the best AFC playoff game they've seen. I still can't get that Chargers versus Dolphins game out of my head. That damn Kellen Winslow senior game, that game will go down as probably the best playoff game I ever seen in my life until something else comes along that replaces it. But Josh Allen played a hell of a game. But Buffalo's number one defense didn't do their job, man. They let them down, especially down the stretch. Like you said, 13 seconds left. Why you not playing press coverage? Make the receivers work to get open. They working to get open. Guess what? The clock is ticking. They let Tyreek get 19 yards on the first play, and then Kelce when they got, what, 20-some yards on the next play?
Yeah, I think it was 23, right.
So yeah, it's like, nah, man, you got to play press coverage because the clock is on your side. It ain't like college where the clock stops when you get a first down. So I just don't understand that. But like you said, it comes down to strategy. Even if you don't squid kick it high, deep, and short. Make them have to return it.
Right.
You know, and
anything
clock,
to where
and
it's in the field of play. Right.
Exactly. And the clock is ticking. So, but – man, once again, Kansas City at home with Mahomes. They just hard to beat, bro. They just really hard to beat.
I do have to give Buffalo credit. They played harder than I expected. I did not think it would be quite that close. But they're very good. Like I said, this was an excellent chance to get to the Super Bowl. They blew it. And one other thing real quick. If their defense may not ever be this good again, because Leslie Frazier, from my understanding, is getting called for some of these openings and potentially interviewing or whatever. And just like I told you last week, black coaches to get an opportunity to be head coaches, even if it's as bad a job as the Houston Texans job, they can't turn it down because you may not get another opportunity. He's been a head coach once before, so he may get another opportunity, so he'll be gone. Who's going to be your new D coordinator? So they may have to get new coordinators on both sides of the ball, and that takes time. And what guys work with this particular setup, they don't work with the new setup. So, yeah, they might be in line for a lot of changes. They're going to take them backwards on both sides of the ball.
And I have to point this out. Kansas City, good win, but that defense is really suspect, Tracy. I know Honey Badger is a key part of their defense, but, man, that defense is really, really suspect.
I mean, there's no other way. Yeah, man, there's no other way to put that, man. But, you know, once you right, I went 2-2. You went 1-3 last week. You did pick Tampa.
Okay,
that's
what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, you did pick Tampa Bay to win. I had
but
to go
I
back to the argument.
I correct you when you get it wrong in my favor. It's all good. I'm going
to
correct you on that.
All right, man, let's go real quick, man. Let's talk about some of the news this week. First up, Sean Payton. Resigned Sean Payton resigns as coach of New Orleans. What was your thoughts on what you're thinking?
You already know on a personal note, I'm so glad that dude is gone. I can't stand him. Before he got to the Saints, I really didn't consider the Saints a rival. I mean, I knew they played him twice a year, but I was like, I kind of felt sorry for him. Because remember back in the old days, they used to be the Angels with the bags and all that, and then every now and then they pop up with somebody like Bobby Hebert, or for they had Aaron Brooks for a while. So I really didn't think about them. But once he got there, you had to take them seriously. And so even though I never liked him, even though I don't feel like he's very arrogant and overbearing, he's a really good coach. And he is going to get another job as soon as they can work out what the arrangements will be, what you got to give up to hire him and all that. You already know he's going to get a good job. I feel like if he was available now, the Bears would have been a good opening for him simply because he knows how to work with quarterbacks, and he would help Justin Fields to be the best of whatever Justin Fields can be. The Saints are in trouble because I feel like they're going to hire somebody like Dennis Allen, and if they do that, they're going to be awful. Remember him as the head coach in the Raiders, and he was not good, and he got let go, I think it was after a couple of years. I know a lot of times coaches do better the second time around, but I just don't see it. I will be ecstatic if they hire him. But real quick, the other thing that that means for the Saints is Jameis Winston is probably going to move on because I feel like any improvement he had this year is because he was working with Sean Payton. So having Pete Carmichael or whoever it is that they have running their office next year, it's not going to look the same. So he's going to start turning the ball over like he was doing with Tampa Bay. And then I think we've seen the end of Taysom Hill's career as a full-time quarterback. Because, again, Sean Payton knew how to get the best out of him. He knew how to make the right calls. And I just don't see anybody else giving him an opportunity to do that. So unless that happens wherever Sean Payton eventually lands, I think Taysom Hill's career, like I said, as a full-time quarterback are done.
Yeah, man. When I saw the news, I got to say I was shocked. But when I sat back and I thought about it, we shouldn't be shocked, Tracy. Sean Payton started writing on the wall. You can't win in this league without a top-notch quarterback. Drew Brees is Hall of Famer. You replaced Drew Brees with Taysom Hill, who is probably the best gadget quarterback in the league, and then with Jameis Winston. Tampa Bay, New Orleans won against Green Bay week one. I want to say it was like 38-3. Jameis Winston threw 5 touchdowns, but the yardage was only like less than 150 yards, I think. It's like, bro, he had a great fantasy game, but a statistical game, I really didn't see it. And I thought he was holding Jameis back. Jameis is a guy that likes to throw the ball down the field. Let him throw the ball down the field. Drew Brees ain't your quarterback no more. So I think Sean Payton really, really watched the writing on the wall, and he was like, nah, man, I'm not going to be able to win what we got. Although they got a top-5 defense, they got some top-notch skill-level players with Kamara, Mike Thomas when he plays. So, and they got a good serviceable offensive line. But, man, I don't see Sean Payton working this year. I think he sits out this year because I think the compensation for what a team wants would be probably 3 number ones and probably a player. Yeah, it's going to be something crazy. So, I think he sits out this year, probably see him on ESPN or NFL Network or something like that. You know, doing TV. And I think another thing that's going to happen, Tracy, I think we probably won't see Mike Thomas in the Saints uniform again. I think Mike Thomas is too much of a headache. I think Sean Payton knew how to deal with Mike Thomas.
to a certain degree, but I don't think anybody wants to deal with Mike Thomas being a headache next year. So I think he's going to be traded.
I agree with you. I think he burned his bridge with the Saints, especially with that, oh, he's coming back from surgery. Oh, he's not coming back from surgery. He's out for the whole year now. And so, yeah, it's one of those situations. Remember back with your Lakers when Shaq could have got that surgery done in the offseason and he kind of waited and waited. Then he wasn't really ready, and he was like, well, I didn't get hurt on my own time. So, and it just kind of threw everything off. Once you start seeing stuff like that, you already know that something's not right between that player and that team. And so I agree with you. Michael Thomas is going somewhere else. My question about him is how effective is he going to be in another system? Because we've seen guys that are just outstanding in certain systems because they know all the nuances, all the throws come to them, et cetera, et cetera. And then they go somewhere else. Well, what happened to this dude? How come he's not doing what he did in this other team? We'll have to see what happens. But I agree with you. Whatever he does next year, it probably won't be for the Saints.
It all depends on how bitter the Saints are with him. They trade him to the Jets. You know, do they
definitely
trade him to the Jets? You know, do they trade him somewhere where he could be part of the offense? You know, do they trade to Baltimore, who is a run-first offense? It all depends on what the Saints do and who gives them the better package. If on the Saints, I'm calling the Jets and see what I can get. Probably a number one this year, a number one this year, maybe a three this year, and a number one next year to see what now I can pull that off. But once teams realize you're trying to get rid of a player, they're going to lowball you on the offer.
Yeah, see Philadelphia and Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
Same thing. You know, once, like you said, once it's known. And plus, for me personally, I think he's a good receiver, but I'm not giving all that away for him. I don't even know if I'd give one number. I might give one number one away for him. But I feel like with somebody like him, you need a veteran quarterback. So somebody like the Jets with Zach Wilson, that's not going to work. Plus, the Jets already have so many wide receivers. They have a lot of good – and they're actually good players too. So there's going to have to be a certain team. And then don't forget, he has a pretty sizable contract. So you got to find a team that's going to be able to absorb his salary cap impact. So that usually means teams that aren't very good. So they're in a quandary. And like you said, people know that they probably want to get rid of him. So, yeah, good luck in getting top quality for him. It's not going to happen. You're going to have to sell him for pennies on the dollar.
I think a team that might take a flyer on him is probably the Raiders. I think the Raiders might take a flyer on him because they need – a number one wide receiver. Hunter Renfro can't be your number one. So we'll see how it works out. Surprise hiring came this week, Tracy. Chicago hired Eberflus as their head coach. And if you don't know who Eberflus is, people, he's the former defensive coordinator of Indy. Last week when we did our coaching hires, Eberflus wasn't even on our radar. But to me, this hire makes no sense, Tracy. You have a young quarterback. We already know that young quarterbacks, especially if they're going to be the future of the franchise, you need to hire an offensive coach. So maybe Eberflus is going to bring in a top-notch offensive coordinator, but from what the team needs, I don't see a defensive coach being a great hire. So I don't like it. But we got to play, wait and see, and see who the offensive coordinator is.
For me, why hire Eberflus? Why? To me, it doesn't make any sense because you already have a top 10 defense. You kind of hit on some of the same things that I was thinking already with what you said. But you already have a top 10 defense, and I know – based on what I've read about him and seeing the way Indy plays, you know, he motivates his guys. They play really hard on defense and all that. But the Bears are doing that anyhow. So how much better are you going to get on defense? And then, like you said, the way you win championships in the NFL is you got to have you a franchise quarterback. So in my mind, either that means they feel like he's going to bring in this great offensive mind that's going to get the best out of Justin Fields, or they don't believe in Justin Fields. So it's one of them. And I don't know who he could possibly bring in, because most of the time we already know who these great offensive minds are, and we haven't heard anybody. Like you said, his name wasn't even brought up when we did the show last week. So now all of a sudden this guy gets a job that we didn't even have him in the running for. To me, it kind of smacks of maybe they wanted to hire somebody else, and maybe that person turned the job down. And so he was kind of like the fallback plan. I don't know who that person could be. It could be they wanted to hire Dan Quinn because supposedly he had an offer and he turned it down and chose to stay with the Cowboys. So I don't know, but I'm with you. To me, this choice makes no sense. If I was a Bears fan, I would have been like, I would not be happy with this decision.
Very much so. I just think that hire does nothing for Justin Fields. But like I just said, Ben, we're going to sit back and we're going to see who the offensive coordinator is. If they can get a good offensive coordinator, then we might have to revisit it. But as we look at it right now, today, I don't like the hire at all. Another hire that happened this week, Denver hires Nathaniel Hackett, former offensive coordinator for Green Bay. I kind of sort of figured they would go this route. So talk about Hackett being a new coach in Denver.
Well, based on what you said last week about your survey of Denver fans, they got to be happy because they did not hire Dan Quinn. That didn't work out. And so they got this guy. To me, I'm surprised they went this route kind of because they were already kind of saying something about they hired two first-time coaches in a row, being Vic Fangio and Vance Joseph. And so they just turned around and did it again. He better work out because Denver fans are impatient. Denver fans are very rabid when they're doing well. But when they are struggling, they're not feeling that. And so now I know a lot of the hope is that they're going to get Aaron Rodgers and bring him in, and they're eventually going to plug him in just like they did with Peyton Manning. I don't know if that's going to happen. I also know that he got this job partially based on his work with Blake Bortles back when he used to be Jacksonville's offensive coordinator. And I actually had forgot that he was there because it's been, what, maybe 4 or 5 years since that happened. But that's where he was before he wound up with the Packers and doing his work there. And offensive scheming and all that stuff is great, but you need people to execute those schemes. So can you see Drew Lock executing complicated offensive schemes? Can you see Teddy Bridgewater? Not that he doesn't get it as far as the X and the O's, but is he able to make the throws that it requires? Does he have the talent that it takes to be that type of quarterback? I question it. And so what's going to determine his success, at least early on, is who's your quarterback next year? Once we figure that out, then we'll have a better idea of where the Broncos are going to be in 2022.
Yeah, man. I kind of sort of figured that they would hire Hackett just because it'll make going to Aaron Rodgers being traded or asking to be traded to Denver more attractive. But you shouldn't hire a coach because of that reason. You should hire a coach because he's going to be a leader of men. He's going to give you a good chance to win on the field, not win a free agency battle or a trade battle or nothing like that. But once again, the dude didn't call any plays for Green Bay. He was in the position of offensive coordinator, but Matt LaFleur is the one that called all the plays. So really, what did Nathaniel Hackett do? So, you know, and then even if we go back to Blake Bortles, that Jacksonville team was built on their defense. I think they had the number one ranked defense that year that they made it to the, what was the AFC Championship game where they lost
the
AFC
Championship game. Patriots, right.
Yeah. So they was a team built on the defense. But Nathaniel Hackett, and then he already trying to bring in, like, the offensive line coach for Green Bay and a quarterback's coach to be, like, the offensive coordinator. Why the hell would you want the offensive line coach to be the offensive coordinator?
Doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, what kind of sense that make? So, I know Denver, you know, the fan base out here, they so used to winning But until they get a quarterback figured out, I think they're just going to be another team, man. So at least they got an offensive coach this time around, because I think in this division, you need an offensive coach. A defensive coach ain't going to cut it.
No, because the offense wins championships, even though I know people like to say defense does. If you have a bend but don't break defense and you have a great offense, you can win.
New England showed you that this year. I mean, they had a bottom 10 offense, but they had a top 10 defense, especially scoring defense. So, all right, man.
There you go.
Got to talk about this. Big Ben announces retirement this week. What does this mean for Mike Tomlin and Pittsburgh in the next season?
I think on certain levels, there's a sigh of relief for Pittsburgh, because you don't have to cut him. You don't have to do something bad to him that makes the fan base look at you funny. He bows out on his own, and he can see the writing on the wall. Ben Roethlisberger hasn't been the same for what, the last 2 years at least. He started out last year pretty good, but once he got hurt and tried to come back, he did not look the same. And even this year, his statistics were okay, but he's not the Big Ben that we know, where he would be able to shake off guys and make plays. And he was a difference maker. It, more so this year, he was like a game manager, and you just hope that he wouldn't make mistakes at the wrong time. And so I think Pittsburgh is, Mike Tomlin specifically, is glad he's gone. Because now they can get them a quarterback that can move around. They can get somebody that is able to maybe hide some of the deficiencies they have on that offensive line. And they can start throwing different routes now, because they can get somebody that has arm strength. So I'm going to say it here. The Steelers are going to be better right away without him. So I think however many games they won this year, what they win, 9 games or something like that, 8 games, they're going to win more games next year simply because they don't have to – work to whatever his deficiencies are, which are a weak arm, he can't run, he can't throw. And so, yeah. And then they already got that battering ram of running back. They have good receivers. They got a good rookie tight end. So I think they're going to be pretty good. You already know their defense is hard. But the main thing with Pittsburgh is, for a team that never changes anything, they had, what, 3 coaches in like 50-some-odd years. But they just lost their defensive coordinator, who retired, and then they are losing their GM, who is stepping down once the draft is over. So for a team, again, that never changes, that's 2 really big changes. Chances are, knowing them, they already have somebody in-house that's going to be the new GM, and so most likely things won't change. But until you see that, you just don't know. So, like I said, in my mind, I think Pittsburgh will be better because they'll have a quarterback that can do more things. But is Dwayne Haskins that guy, one of your favorites?
No.
Is Mason Rudolph that guy? Somebody like Jameis Winston going to come there? Is somebody like Aaron Rodgers going to come there? You just don't know. And so I think they are relieved that they get to find out what the future looks like, but they may not like what it looks like when they find out.
I think Pittsburgh is going to be real aggressive in getting a veteran quarterback. I think you can't, in that division with Lamar, Baker, and Joe Burrow, I think you have to be, you need a quarterback that you can win with right now, because those teams are young with young quarterbacks, and those teams have talent. Pittsburgh has talent. You got Najee. You got Clay, you got Claypool, you got Deontay Johnson, Freiermuth, like you said. You got a good defense. So the only thing you're really missing is a quarterback. So I think Pittsburgh is going to be really, really making calls in the offseason to see who is really on the market and who is really available for them. Jameis, that would be a good option if he wasn't coming off injury. But I think they're going to go after Rodgers, Russell Wilson. And I think Mike Tomlin will either kick the tires on Deshaun Watson, man. You have to if you're in the quarterback market. Hey, Big Ben is going to be definitely a Hall of Famer. I don't see Pittsburgh being in a position to draft either Pickett or Corral in the draft. So you think they'll take a dive with Malik Willis for Liberty?
That may be the only option they have if he's still available when they pick. Because here's something else you have to remember. Pittsburgh would have to go against type to bring in some big offensive free agent signing. That's just not what they do. They usually draft really well, and then they pick up under-the-radar guys that perform really well for them. I honestly can't remember the last time they tried to bring in a high-priced free agent. Can you? Or not even a free agent, but necessarily even trading for somebody that's a big name like Aaron Rodgers would be. That's just not what they do. And so they would have to do something that they have not done, and at least not in my recent memory, in order to get somebody like that. So it may have to be down to, you know, getting somebody like Deshaun Watson or seeing if they can get the kid from Liberty again if he's still around. So, I'm like I said, I think they are happy to have the option to be able to do this. Now it comes down to picking the right guy.
I think the last splash free agents or trade they made that was actually beneficial to the team, I would say Tommy Maddox is one and Jerome Bettis is two. Actually, I'd say Jerome Bettis is one, Tommy Maddox two, because the Bucs didn't win the Super Bowl. So, but, man, Pittsburgh, they had a chance to draft a quarterback, man, that year that Ben got hurt. And they didn't do it, man. They kept their faith in Ben. And I just thought that was a bad move. And I think kicking themselves in the butt is Kevin Colbert, the GM, and probably and Mike Tomlin. Pittsburgh, y'all win. So being able to draft in the top 10 or the top half of the draft, you can't miss out on the quarterback.
No, you can't. Because, like you said, if you're a successful team like they are, you don't get those chances very often. Maybe once every 10 years, if that.
So, another big topic this week, Tracy. And, man, this topic, we definitely got to talk about it. We got regular season overtime rules, and we got playoff overtime rules. Should they be different?
No, and I say that because every time somebody loses a particular way, all of a sudden the rules need to be changed. Oh, the Bills never got a chance to touch the ball. What an awful way to end the game. We got to come up with a change for the rules for that. And then remember a few years ago with the Rams and the Saints, and the Saints had that egregious pass interference committed against them, and they didn't get the call, and they wound up losing. Oh, the Saints didn't get that call. Isn't that awful? Let's make up a rule to where they can challenge pass interferences. That'll make the game better. That lasted a grand total of one season. They couldn't even figure out how to judge those type of challenges. And so the NFL was like, okay, we tried to fix it. It didn't work. Well, let's just go back to the way it was. So in my mind, overtime is the way it is. It's the luck of the draw, of course, picking heads over tails or vice versa and getting the ball first and driving. But listen, you still have to beat the other team. If you're a defense,
yep.
If you want to win, stop them. And then you don't have to hear this whine about, we didn't get the ball. Oh, Josh Allen didn't lose. He just ran out of time. He lost. They didn't score more points than Kansas City did. His defense let him down. They needed him. I know they were gassed because they were on the field forever in that game. So I know they were tired. But, hey, man, that's just the way the ball bounces. When it doesn't work in your favor this way, another game, it does work in your favor. So you just have to – it is what it is. The only thing that I would say that should be different between regular season and postseason is obviously in the regular season you can have ties. But in playoffs, you have to play until somebody wins. Other than that, you had just leave it the way it is. Stop making changes because something just happened that people don't like. When the Falcons lost in the Super Bowl to the Patriots, they never got the ball. And that was the only time that they trailed an entire game, which on the surface sounds absolutely ridiculous. You lose the Super Bowl, but you never trailed until the very last score of the game. So, I mean, that's just the way stuff shakes out. It's not, you can't legislate everything. you have to have a set of rules, and then you just live with them. And that's just the way it has to be.
Well, Tracy, man, you don't disagree often, but I'm going to disagree with you on this.
I can't wait to hear how you can possibly disagree with such a cogent argument as I just presented. But go ahead. I want to hear it.
I'm going to disagree with you on this one, dog. I know that, you know, the rules are if you score a touchdown, you know, ball game over, you kick a field goal, the other team gets touched the ball. All right. What's the difference between a field goal and a touchdown? They both scores. They both scores.
Well,
so,
yeah.
You know, I was listening to people, Colin Cowherd. He was saying, well, you know, over time, it becomes a player safety issue because normally most players start to get hurt in the second half of games, la, 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 la. And the playoffs is different from regular season because of the finality. When you lose, you're going home. Maybe I'm a prisoner of the moment. I wanted to see Josh Allen get the ball. I want to see whether or not he could do it under the overtime pressure. See whether or not he could take them down the field and score and, you know, possibly go for two and win the game. I'm not afraid to admit that maybe I'm just caught up in the moment. But I think in the playoffs, man, that both teams touch it. Even if the other team scores a touchdown, hey, that puts all the pressure on the other team. Now you got to go down and score a touchdown. So, and then you go into what's called sudden death. Next team scores, win. So, all the reason I say that is because of the finality of the playoffs, man. And when you got good teams playing each other. So, let's see how it shakes out.
You caught up in the moment. And I get it. I understand it because, like I said, I understand the mindset of, well, let them get a chance too. But this is what will happen. Josh Allen gets hurt in the overtime. Oh, under the old rules, he shouldn't even been in there. This has become an issue of player safety. We need to go back to the way the old rules used to be. Everything is always driven, like I said, by what just happened. So if something bad happened like that, then all of a sudden it's time to change back. It's just always something that they always have these narratives that come up based on recent events. So I get what you're saying. I understand it. If they did change it to where they allowed everybody to have at least one possession, regardless of whether it was a touchdown or field goal, okay, I kind of get that. But I just think that you're opening yourself up to there's going to need to be more changes when something else happens. Okay, then there needs to be more changes. Then now you're striking because the Players Association feels like you already added another game. Now you're potentially adding more minutes that they're not getting paid for. They get the same amount of money, all this stuff. So the game is great like it is. Stop messing with it.
Once again, Tracy laying down the law, but I totally agree. I totally disagree. Only because I just feel like in the playoffs are played at a higher level. So let's append the rule for the playoffs. But I'm not mad about it because everybody know the rules going in. And Buffalo, y'all supposed to have number one defense. Going in and quote unquote, put your best unit on the field, and they get marched down right on. So, hey, it is what it is, like Tracy said. All right, man, got two more topics left. Who you got your eye on this week?
Okay, kind of like what you said last week, because I did one for each team. My thing is very seldom is it about a guy as much as it is an entire unit. And the first thing I'm going to say is San Francisco is obviously the running game. If they can't run, they're dead. Because, like I said earlier, they threw for exactly the same amount of yards as they ran. How many games are you going to win doing that? And so you have to be able to run the ball if you're San Francisco and you want to win this game. Because not only does that stop Jimmy G from having to throw the ball, it also keeps Stafford on the sidelines. And so your defense doesn't have to waste a lot of energy trying to stop them. They can be ready when they really need to be able to rush the passer and things you need to do to win the game. So for them, I think their running game is first, second, and third most important, and that's what I got my eye on. Do you want me to run through all four, or you just want me to do them game by game?
What you got for the Cincinnati on Kansas City game?
So real quick on this game, though, the San Francisco game for the Rams, to me, it's the same thing. Running back. Last week they ran for, what, like 54 yards, but Cam Akers ran the ball like 24 times. They could not get traction. You're not going to be able to do that against San Francisco because they don't have any injuries. They're not missing any defensive players. They don't have any dinged up guys. So they're coming after Stafford. You need to be able to run the ball to counteract that and keep the defense honest. So for them, that's my thing. For the Cincinnati game, I kind of alluded to it earlier. Tyrann Mathieu is key to me. Cincinnati loves to throw the ball. They make big plays. They made a couple of big plays last week in the passing game. And so if you're Kansas City and you want to make sure you win this game, you need Tyrann Mathieu back there calling out signals and doing what he needs to do to help that back end do what they need to do to help the guys in the front. Because you mentioned earlier that Kansas City struggled on defense, and obviously they did. But you also have to remember that Kansas City has three really good pass rushers, Chris Jones,
yep,
and Frank Clark, and Ingram, yep, that they got from the Steelers. And so we saw what the city of Cincinnati's offensive line is. So expect the same thing this week. So if they can get after him and you got Tyrann Mathieu in the back, this game could be a rout. And then the last thing is Cincinnati with their offensive line. Again, awful last week. No team wins when they give up 9 sacks. Except for last week. And so you cannot repeat that again. You got to give your guy time. And that's the only way you're going to be able to win this game. If he keeps getting hit like that, it's not good for him. It's just a matter of time before he gets injured. And you are not going to win this game against a powerhouse like Kansas City. Tennessee slugs it out. Kansas City can light you up. And so they got to protect him better if they want to stay in this game and have a chance to win it.
Man, that's funny because great minds think alike. I had Cincinnati offensive line have to play better than last week, especially going against Kansas City high-power offense. Tennessee didn't take advantage of 9 sacks. Whereas I know if you keep giving the ball back to Kansas City, they're going to light that scoreboard up. Also got that maybe Cincinnati want to do something different with the offense. Get Burrow out of the pocket. Have him do some rollouts, you know, some naked bootlegs. You got to do something different than to alleviate your offensive line weakness. So I definitely had Cincinnati on offensive line and also had Cam Akers. Cam Akers had a bad game last week. And I don't even care about the rushing attempts and the yards. You can't fumble the ball, bro. Fumbling the ball, turnover the cost of team of our game. And last week, we almost saw that. Tampa Bay was getting dominated until the Rams started turning the ball over. So, Cam Akers, you got to know when to get down, take the yards, or take a loss. Ain't no need to fight for extra yards because normally when you fight for extra yards, bad things happen. Just get down and live to fight another down and let your team fight another down. But the one unit I got my eye on outside of Cincinnati offensive line, Tracy, San Francisco DBs versus the Rams receiving corps. San Francisco's secondary has been suspect all year, and they lead the league in defensive pass interference penalties. Going against Stafford, Kupp, OBJ, and Higbee could make for a long day for that defense. So hopefully they can find a way to defend on the Rams on wide receiver core legally and don't give up big penalties in this game. Make the Rams earn everything they're going to get in this game.
Yeah, you had definitely a lot of the same things I said, but here's a question for you. What happens if Cam Akers fumbles in like one of the first drives of this game?
Tony Michel.
You shut him down for the rest of the game?
Sony Michel.
Do you trust him again? No more? You take him out?
Sony
Is that what happened? I agree.
Hey, bro. I think right now the stakes are too high. And that'll be, what, 3 fumbles in 2 games? That,
yeah,
that
sure
looks like
be.
A trend to me. That like a trend, not a blip. So
God, there you go.
Maybe you bring in Sony Michel probably for the next 4 or 5 series, and then you probably put Akers in again and see how he looks, see how he plays. But if he fumbles, dog, let's say on the first series, I'm going with Sony Michel, dog.
Yeah, in my mind, if he fumbles again, whenever it is, he can't play anymore because, like you said, this is one and done. Trusting him and all that, that works in the regular season. If he starts fumbling in this game, if they're lucky enough to get to the Super Bowl in spite of it, maybe we'll test him out again there. But, yeah, you just can't afford to give possessions away because you only get so many. And once it's gone, you don't get it back. So, yeah, he'll have to sit down. If he fumbles once, he's done for the game, unless injuries force them to bring him back. You just can't trust it.
And plus, the stakes are higher now. It ain't like you playing bad teams. A good team is going to take advantage of your mistakes. So,
yeah, like last week.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, if he fumbles, Cam, look, bro. We're going to sit you down for a couple series. We're going to let Sony go, see what we can unloose, get him unloose. And, you know, man, you got to hold on to the ball. We can't have you fumbling the ball, bro. All right, Tracy, here we go, the moment of truth, predictions. First game Sunday, Kansas City, Cincinnati. Who you got?
Kansas City over Cincinnati. Kansas City simply has too much firepower. Offensively, Cincinnati's line, like I said, is a sieve. And I just feel like that Kansas City will make enough plays. They're at home, and they just have all the advantages on their side. Home, they have the experience. They got the better quarterback, even though Joe Burrow is very good. And, yeah, I just think that they have the advantage in every area. There's absolutely no reason that they shouldn't win this game. So, Kansas City.
I got Kansas sitting in a beatdown. I don't think it's going to be close. Kansas City was so Cincinnati. There's a big difference between playing the Arrowhead versus Paul Brown Stadium with Cincinnati one. I see Kansas City getting the 40 points. I see them getting the 40 points this weekend and making it look real easy against Cincinnati. Cincinnati only chance of winning this game is if Kansas City turn the ball over and Mahomes presses for big plays. Outside of that, I don't see Cincinnati having a chance, bro.
I agree.
Yeah, man. If Cincinnati can keep within, I would say, 2 scores, hey, that's a good feat for them. So.
Oh, I agree. I just think, like I said, Kansas City, in my mind, has the advantage in the entire unit, not just individual pieces of those units on both sides of the ball.
All right, man. The nightcap, NFC Championship game. We got San Francisco going to the NFC West rival, the Rams. San Francisco has owned this series in the last couple games. I think they 6-0, I want to say, against the Rams. Who you got?
I think they're about to make it 7-0. I know the league hopes that the Rams win. San Francisco making it to the Super Bowl will make it's not quite as exciting just simply because of the way they play. But I just think they're going to win. Like you said, they win every game. Why all of a sudden would they not win now? I think that they, for whatever reason, they figured out what it takes to beat the Rams. They've got them figured out. That's not going to change now. They still got the same coaches. They still got the same players. So as long as San Francisco doesn't turn the ball over, I think they're going to win this game. I think they're going to control the ball. I think they're going to play just enough defense to win. And then the Rams are going to get frustrated once they can't get what they want. I think the Rams will probably turn the ball over. Stafford will throw an interception or 2. They're going to trust Cam Akers, and he's going to do what we already talked about. However it shakes out, I just see San Francisco winning this game.
Man, this is a tough one to pick, but I'm quite sure if you was to ask Kansas City who they would want to play in the Super Bowl, I think Kansas City would probably say they want to play the Rams. I think Kansas City would probably want to play the Rams because they don't want to play a physical team like the 49ers. The Chiefs are somewhat a finesse team. The Rams are somewhat a finesse team outside of Aaron Donald. So I'm going to go the other way, man. I think the Rams run the ball a little more effectively in this game. I think the Rams will stop the run better than like they did in the last game, and they'll make this a Jimmy G game where he's going to have to beat them. They cannot let San Francisco do what they did in that first game they played this year. San Francisco ran the ball 40-plus times in that first game, allowing them to dominate the time of possession. If the 49ers are doing that, it's over. The Rams have no chance of winning. They have no chance of winning unless they can be a big play offense and go down and score in like five or six plays every drive. But I think San Francisco defense is too good to allow them to do that. But I'm going to take the Rams. And I also think the Rams limit Debo's effectiveness on the game. So we get Kansas City versus the Rams in the Super Bowl. Man, San Francisco is a tough out, bro. I think the Rams, they loving that they playing at home. But let's see how many San Francisco fans be up in that stadium on Sunday.
Oh, from my understanding, it's going to be more San Francisco fans than Ram fans. And then real quick, going back to something that you said, I think that the Chiefs would rather face the 49ers, and here's why. Remember what happened to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl last year, where they were getting all that pressure and Mahomes, he was just running for his life the whole time.
Uh-huh.
The Rams are one of the few teams that could duplicate that. Because we already talked about how they got Miller and they got Aaron Donald, where they can pass rush from both sides at the same time, or they can load them up on one side, however they want to do it. And then, even one better, the Buccaneers don't have anybody nearly as good as Jalen Ramsey on the back end. And so I feel like maybe the Rams might be able to duplicate what Tampa Bay did last year and use that formula to try to beat the Chiefs if they made it to the Super Bowl. So I don't know if they necessarily want to see the Rams because of that.
Yeah, but San Francisco front four is pretty good too. Tyron Armstead, Bosa, the other kid from, I want to say South Carolina, he's pretty good. So San Francisco front four is pretty good too. So I think both teams definitely got good front fours, whereas I think the Rams front four is probably a little bit more talented. And I think the Rams, they will probably put Jalen Ramsey on Kittle. I think that'll be the matchup that'll happen in the Super Bowl. They'll take their chances doubling Tariq over the top and manning up Hartman and going one-on-one with Jalen on Kelsey.
Maybe. That could happen because they got some tough guys. And that's going to be what you have to do if you want to beat them. You're going to have to double Tyreek because expecting one guy to cover him everywhere with that speed, that's a tall order. And, I mean, even for somebody as good as Jalen Ramsey. So, like you say, doubling him and then putting Ramsey on Kelsey, and he's big enough to do that, might have a shot. And then especially if you can get pressure on him.
Yeah.
You definitely have a chance. If you can get pressure on Mahomes, you definitely have a chance to win that game.
Yeah, bro. Man, it's going to be interesting this weekend, you know. We got to get through this weekend to see who we're going to play in the Super Bowl. But once again, you know, me and Tracy breaking it down for everybody. You know, for the games this weekend, it's always good talking football with my boy Tracy. I want to say we got the NBA mid-season show coming up. I want to say pretty soon.
I don't know when the All-Star game is, but we normally do it around the All-Star period, All-Star game. And, you know, but it's, we're going to talk football right now. We'll get back into basketball. But, hey, any last words for the people?
Yeah, real quick, while you were speaking about basketball, what do you think about Boogie Cousins going to the Nuggets?
I love it. I think Boogie definitely played well with Milwaukee, and he has a skill set where he could play with Joker. He could be on the floor at the same time as Joker because he can play the stretch four. He can bang down low. It all depends on how Malone uses him. But I just like it because I'm quite sure he's battling Joker in practice, making Joker work. So probably what we see is probably better on the practice court than probably what we actually see in the game.
Yeah, the reason why I like him is because something that people don't talk about that much with him is he's a good passer. I know people like to talk about how he doesn't move that well, and, yeah, he never was a great defense player, even when he was at his best. But he knows how to play the game. He is a good passer and a willing passer. And so I think that part of his game kind of mirrors Joker. So when Jokic goes to sit down and they have him running with the second unit, you still have a good passing big man that you can run your offense around. And they don't just try to tread water until Jokic comes back, which is what has been happening. You know, they just struggle when he's gone. And then, you know, once he plays, all is right. So I think he helps out a lot in that area.
Yeah, man. Hopefully they'll let DeMar, they'll sign Boogie for the rest of the year, especially Bol Bol being out. Michael Porter, they don't know when he's coming back. You know, Jamal Murray, don't know when he's coming back. So,
right.
You know, Jeff Green and Jermichael Green, you know, they serviceable. You know, but I would rather play DeMarcus Cousins over Jermichael Green. You know what I'm saying? So, hey, I'm just saying, man. No disrespect to Jermichael Green, but I just think Boogie is a better player. So, but we'll jump into that, man. You know, we got some. We'll definitely be talking basketball here shortly because what we got, the NFC, we got the championship games this week and Super Bowl. What, in 2 weeks?
Right, yeah, you got that two-week gap.
And I think the NBA All-Star game is what, next? I don't know what day that is, so.
Yeah,
but
I'm not sure either, but, I mean, you know it's right around the corner because they just selected starters, so it's coming up. It's obviously not this Sunday, and you know it's not going to be Super Bowl Sunday. So it could be that Sunday in between the championship game and the Super Bowl.
Yeah. So, you know, man, we're definitely going to talk about that because – you know, we got to go back and revisit what we talked about on the preseason show. So, which was fun too. So, and it's a lot of movement, bro. It's been a lot of movement. You know, it's been a lot of movement within the NBA this year. But we'll let the NBA shine. You know, when we talk about them.
Right.
But hey, man, have a nice weekend. Hey, me and you will talk probably earlier. The All-Star game is February 20th. NBA All-Star game is February 20th.
So we do like 3 weeks or so.
Yeah. So it's after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I did not expect that. Normally, like I say, once they select the starters, the game is pretty imminent. So, interesting.
Yeah, because I normally thought they would announce the starters and then maybe 2 weeks later it'd be the game. But
right. That's what I thought, too. But I guess maybe they're doing things different for whatever reason this season.
Yeah, because the Super Bowl is I know that's 2 weeks, two Sundays after the championship game. So, yeah, that's kind of weird.
That's real weird because – remember in the old days, the All-Star game used to be almost literally at the 41-game point, the halfway point of the season. But they don't do it that way anymore. Usually, I guess they play like 50-some-odd games. So I'm not sure why they moved it back, but that's how it's done.
I think they moved it back because basically they didn't want to compete with the Super Bowl, because remember the Super Bowl was only in January. But then the NFL started pushing it back in February.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I think that's why the NFL, that's why they normally be like a little bit over the halfway point, because Super Bowl is actually February 13th.
Okay, and then looks like you got the All-Star game is the following Sunday. So, yeah, I guess that makes sense, because you certainly don't want to compete with the Super Bowl.
Yeah, nobody wants to compete with the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's a losing proposition. And that's an all-day event. Nothing else should be on, because you're either watching it or you get ready to watch it. So,
yep. But, okay, man, another good show, man. We talked a lot of football. I love talking football with my boy Tracy. We'll be back probably in a couple weeks. We'll probably jump on Super Bowl weekend, Super Bowl Friday. But I don't know. We'll get together. We'll figure out whether or not we want to jump on that Friday, too. We got to talk about. But, you know, well, it's always good chopping it up with you, Tracy, man. Appreciate you. Hey, everybody have a good weekend. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. With that being said, happy birthday to the God MC, Rakim. Happy birthday, bro. Did I know today your birthday, and I want to give you a shout-out. Yeah,
happy today
is
birthday,
bro. 51. Yep.
61? That doesn't even sound right.
No, no, no. 51.
There's no way.
Yeah.
He lying.
Me and him the same age.
He lying.
No, I looked it up today.
But we'll lay, it's his birthday. We'll let him slide. We're going to roll with 51.
Yeah, man. I was like, damn, me and Rakim the same age.
That's shocking to me. Now you got me having to look that up. When you said 61, I believed it because I just thought that's how old he was. But like I said, his birthday, we'll let him roll with 51.
Yeah, that girl lied. He's 54. He was born in 68. That girl on the radio said he was 51. Yeah, he's 54, dog.
Okay, he was 51, but we all like to go back 3 years younger than we really are.
Hey, but one thing about it, he's still dressed like he's in his 20s.
Oh, he still dresses like he's with Aaron B.
Hey, man, I was watching, he was doing this one-man show. It was just him and the DJ. Bro, he had on, like, his jeans suit, a T-shirt, a gold chain, some sneakers. I was like, damn, why can't they trying to be like, they're dressing like him in his 20s?
He has no idea that it's 2022. He still thinks it's 1986. He still thinks Eric B is president and Know the Ledge and all his hits he was putting out back then.
Yeah, man. But happy birthday to the God MC, man. That being said, everybody be good. Have a good weekend. As always, we end the show with a peace.